This is Talk of Iowa. I'm Dennis Reese. Jenny Schaefer writes, no one wants to go through life walking on eggshells around food. In fact, you don't have to walk on eggshells in your life. Eating disorders are not really about food and weight anyway, so recovery is not just about food and weight. It's about much more. Schaefer's latest book is Goodbye, Ed, Hello Me, Recover from Your Eating Disorder, Fall in Love with Life. She's on the Iowa State University campus today to speak and lecture at the start of National Eating Disorders Awareness Week. Having battled her own disorder some years ago, she says she was once chained to ED, that's short for eating disorders, with a heavy-duty lock, but she finally found the strength to keep ED at bay, and she found joy and peace in her life. This hour we'll talk to Schaefer and take your calls. Talk of Iowa in 5 minutes following Iowa Public Radio and NPR News. Good morning. This is Talk of Iowa. I'm Dennis Reese. Jenny Schaefer writes, you might know that ED stands for Eating Disorder, the acronym ED. I learned in therapy to treat my eating disorder like a relationship rather than an illness or a condition. I learned to think of it as a distinct being with unique thoughts and a personality separate from my own. Jenny Schaefer's new book, just released by McGraw-Hill, is called Goodbye, Ed, Hello Me, and Jenny Schaefer is in our studios in Ames. Good morning, Jenny.
Hi, thanks for having me on the show.
Well, it's really nice to have you here. It's an inspirational book. I think people that don't have eating disorders should read it, just for one thing, to learn about the disease, and also to learn about your inspiration in dealing with it and how you made a bad thing into a good thing over, you know, a fairly long period of time. And it did take quite a while, didn't it?
Yes, it took years. You know, when you're talking about recovery from an eating disorder, you're really looking at years. You're not looking at months. And I think some people don't realize that when they first get help, and they can feel rather hopeless in the beginning. When I first got help, I actually thought, you know, all of a sudden I'd just get better in a few weeks. But as you mentioned with my story, I was sick for so long that it took longer than that. And I had to learn to be patient and to give myself the time to recover, and also learn that sometimes getting worse actually means you're getting better. You know, when I first fought my eating disorder, which you mentioned I called Ed, you know, Ed got mad and fought me back even harder. So does that make sense?
Yes, indeed. And this started, you first noticed at age 4, when you were taking ballet lessons, that you weren't as thin as the other girls, and you were already starting to worry about your body.
Yes, at 4, I remember being in dance class, and I remember, just like you said, thinking that I wasn't as thin as the other girls in the room, and tying that to that I wasn't good enough. And what's interesting about all of that really is that there's no photographic evidence of me growing up as a child that I was ever overweight. I was always actually a normal weight. You know, I was a normal kid. I shouldn't have been worrying about that in the first place, but already at that young age, I had negative body image distortions.
Your parents didn't pressure you at all, did they? They seemed, I mean, reading the book, they seemed like they were great parents.
No, you know, I'm so glad you mentioned that. Actually, yeah, I have great, great parents, and most, you know, I meet a lot of girls and guys with eating disorders, and most of the parents are just great. They're supporting, they're loving, but they don't know what to do when their child comes to them with this illness. And it really is, there's a learning curve. My parents, when I first told them about my eating disorder, had no idea how to help me. But what was great about them was that they learned, and they took advice from my therapist, and they changed some of the things they had said to me. As far as, you know, my dad, when I first told him I had an eating disorder, he said, well, I don't understand. Why don't you just eat like we do? And of course, with an eating disorder, you can't just eat. But, you know, growing up, my mom never talked about weight. Neither did my dad. We never owned a scale in the house. So it was something that was always kind of living in my head. And looking back, I can see the big problem was that I never voiced that. I never said anything to my parents. They never knew that I worried so much about food and weight. It was trapped in my head. And I would encourage people listening to the show, if you have those thoughts in your head, the first step to getting help is to tell someone, anyone.
This is National Eating Disorders Awareness Week, and you'll be speaking tonight at 7 o'clock in the Memorial Union at Iowa State University in Ames. How many eating disorders are there, I guess is what I'm saying? Are there various disorders, or is there just one sort of anorexia bulimia sort of disorder?
I'm so glad you asked that question. You know, there's so many different kinds of eating disorders. There's anorexia, which you mentioned, which is characterized more by the restricting of food and loss of weight. Bulimia, which is more the binging and purging. It's important to know purging is many things. There's actually something called exercise bulimia, where people purge by actually over-exercising. But there's a whole another category of eating disorders called EDNOS, which is eating disorders not otherwise specified. And that's kind of a catch-all category for those folks that don't fit into the rigid criteria of anorexia and bulimia. EDNOS is just as severe as anorexia and bulimia. What's really sad out there these days is that oftentimes people who don't fit into the specific criteria for anorexia and bulimia feel like they don't have a real eating disorder and they don't get help. And that's so bad right now that they're actually changing the specific diagnostic criteria for anorexia and bulimia because it's not working. You know, with EDNOS, there's actually an eating disorder that falls into that, which is binge eating disorder. So many people in this country, millions of Americans, struggle with binge eating disorder, and they also don't feel like it's a real disorder, which it is. And if you're struggling with food on any level, I encourage people to get help. If your life is powerless because of food or miserable because of food and weight, regardless of what you're doing, the specific behaviors, get help regardless of your weight. And another myth is that people with eating disorders are underweight or overweight. Well, that's just not true. You know, a lot of people, most people I know with eating disorders actually look absolutely healthy. They look normal on the outside.
Now, binging you're talking about, does that automatically result in purging or bulimia, or is that just a category of its own? You binge and then you don't binge for a while and you binge again.
You know, binge eating disorder is characterized more by the binging without the compensatory behaviors that bulimia has. Michelle Rowling is actually sitting here right next to me. She's a certified eating disorder specialist. If I'd love her to comment on binge eating disorder, because I think, Michelle, you might know a little more than I do.
All right. Yeah. Good morning, Michelle, certified eating disorder specialist at Iowa State.
Good morning, Dennis.
Anyway, we're talking about binge eating, and the question was, is it a disorder all in of itself? Is it just a single disorder?
Sure. Binge eating disorder is really one of those eating disorders that in a lot of ways is normalized by our culture. I would venture to guess that in every single family, there are certain holidays where the norm is to binge. The difference between kind of having a few days of the year where that is typical and for someone who struggles with binge eating disorder is that those individuals with an eating disorder struggle with that on a regular basis, sometimes multiple times per day. And it can be classified as either kind of consuming food throughout the entire day, just this constant grazing where you're consuming well over your daily recommended intake, or sitting and eating mass quantities of food at one sitting. Either of those qualify. And truly, the question you asked about the different eating disorders, the commonality between them is really the emotional piece of the eating disorders. They actually have more in common than they do being different. The blame, shame, emotional frustration, and body dissatisfaction is the piece that ties them all together.
I was surprised to learn, and I didn't know you were going to be on the program until just before 10, but that Iowa State has a certified eating disorder specialist. Do most large college campuses have a staff person and like yourself? And also, are you talking mostly to students?
Unfortunately, most universities aren't staffed with someone who has eating disorders as a specialist. More and more are trying. Most universities and college campuses do have a student counseling service. And the rise of eating disorders across universities and colleges across the nation are really, by necessity, putting specialists on college campuses. Here in Iowa, we are so limited geographically regarding the other services our students have access to that really by necessity we are needing to respond to the mass need for eating disorder services. And we are really fortunate here on campus to have a team here to serve our students.
Is the problem getting worse?
Every year.
866-780-9100. We'd love to hear your questions and comments about eating disorders. We have on the program today Michelle Rowling from Iowa State and author Jenny Schaefer, best-selling author, singer, songwriter as well, who is on a tour now, in a speaking tour, mostly on some major college campuses. Again, the number is 866-780-9100. Email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Jenny Schaefer, you say throughout this book, you'll see the words time and patience a lot. So much of recovery is just that. I'm quoting you. When we talk about recovering from eating disorders, we're talking about years, not months. And indeed, it sounds like you've got a lot of therapy for a long time before you kicked that out of the house, right?
Yes. It was very, my relationship with my eating disorder was very much like an abusive marriage. You know, I was like married to this guy named Ed. Of course, that was the eating disorder. And it was an abusive relationship in the sense that I hated Ed. I hated how Ed controlled me. But like many battered wives out there, I did not know how to leave. I could not get out of the situation. And it was so difficult and so challenging and took so much time and patience. But I can say to anyone listening who's struggling, it's recovery is worth all of the hard work. It's worth the money to pay for professional help. It's worth it because I fully believe people can be 100% recovered, which you probably saw that on my new book. My favorite sentence on the book actually is on the back, and it says, "Don't battle an eating disorder forever. Recover from it completely." And that's my main message these days is you can get better. It's also important to note that, you know, the earlier people get help, this oftentimes the more quickly they can recover. I've seen girls that or guys that got help as a teenager immediately, and I saw them recover much quicker than I did. You know, someone like myself, I struggled from really 4 to 22 without getting help. So time that you've struggled really also impacts them, the time you takes to recover.
You say people should get help. Do insurance plans normally cover treatment for eating disorders?
That is a good question. And I personally struggled a lot with getting my health insurance to cover my eating disorder treatment. It was very difficult. They didn't cover much. And I'm very grateful that I had parents that actually supported me and helped pay for therapy. If I would not have had parents to help me, I could not have paid for it. And today, what's so sad is that so many men and women out there cannot get help because insurance still refuses to accept that eating disorders are real life-threatening illnesses. So I hope that things can change. There's actually a group, the Eating Disorders Coalition, that works out of Washington, D.C., that really tries to change some of that. And it's spearheaded heavily by Kitty Weston, who actually lost her daughter Anna, to an eating disorder.
Jenny, hold on, and Michelle as well. We have to take a short break. We'll be back in a minute. We'll take some calls here on Iowa Public Radio, talking to Jenny Schaefer. Goodbye, Ed. Hello, me. Recover from your eating disorder and fall in love with life. Time is 20 past 10. I'm Dennis Reese, and this is Talk of Iowa. Very interesting book called Goodbye, Ed. Hello, me. Ed, short for eating disorders, written by Jenny Schaefer. Jenny, I loved the parts of the book where you were talking about your life, and at one point you almost got married, and at the very last second decided that this guy was an alcoholic, and you just sort of gave the ring back to him and canceled the wedding. That took some courage.
Yes, it that definitely took courage, and I mentioned that in my book for a reason, and the reason was that, you know, that was a difficult thing to do. Anyone out there who's canceled a wedding or broken an engagement or, you know, divorce or just a broken relationship in general knows how challenging that can be. And what was so amazing to me is during that time in my life, I never once thought about turning to my eating disorder, turning to Ed to cope with that. You know, it was painful. I probably never cried so much in my life as I cried during that time. But I did not turn to food. You know, I learned in recovery that I could deal with life on life's terms without using food. And that's when I started realizing, wow, if I can make it through this without turning to Ed, maybe I'm really fully recovered. Maybe I can stop saying I'm always in recovery, because that's what I used to say. In fact, if you read my first book, Life Without Ed, I refer to myself as being in recovery. But if you obviously you've looked at the book, so thank you for doing that. You notice that I use the word recovered now, you know, recovered period.
Right. Right. Let's go to a caller. Craig is calling from Cedar Rapids. And hi, Craig.
How are you people today?
Great. How are you?
Great. I just wonder if there's any correlation between depression, obsessive compulsive, obsessive eating, like these places that all you can eat, being addicted to anything, and you overcome one addiction and so it creates another addiction. Like smoking or whatever, obsessive drinking. Is there any correlation between all these things?
Yeah, Craig, I'm going to answer your question. This is Michelle. That's an excellent question. And actually, research is really showing us, as we look at PET scans for individuals, that the exact same neural pathway lights up for an alcoholic when they are presented with or thinking about alcohol as for individuals who are struggling with an eating disorder. Either in the experience of eating or thinking about the food, there's a lot of correlation. We know that for eating disorders, one of the pieces, and there are multiple pieces that play the part in a development of an eating disorder, but one of the pieces is definitely a genetic component, that if in a family line there is a history of depression, anxiety, other mental illness, alcoholism, or eating disorders, an individual is much more susceptible toward the development of an eating disorder. And again, I just really want to emphasize, it's not 100% correlation. It just means that an individual really needs to be more cautious and pay attention to their mental health and body acceptance.
What about these foods that aren't really good for you and the high expense of buying quality foods that are very nutritious?
I'm really glad that you mentioned that about good foods. We really look at, there's not a good food and a bad food. There are some foods that obviously have more nutritional density than other foods, but all food has a place in our consumption. And what has happened is that we have started to put some emotional energy into food instead of food just being food. And what happens is there's a lot of anxiety around certain foods. And what I really feel like we as a public need to do is to get more into balance, kind of go back to the old school message that our grandparents tried to instill us with, which is all things in moderation, and the reality that when we get to a place, and the goal in recovery is to get to a place of doing what we call mindful eating or intuitive eating, where we're really utilizing the food guide pyramid and paying attention to what our body's telling us around our hunger cues and what our body needs.
Craig?
What about standing sideways, looking at yourself in a mirror and trying to visualize that thin person that you could be, and then working towards that, realizing that your body will consume the excess fat?
Well,
okay, Jenny or Michelle.
One of the misnomers is that our culture tells us that we can make our body conform to a specific look. And truly, what we need to start thinking about is, what does the genetic line in my family look like? You know, in the same way we can't control whether our eyes are blue or brown, we also can't control what our stature is and what our body's natural set point weight is. And your set point weight is kind of the biological size that your body is going to function the best at and be the most efficient at. And we would all love our set point to look like what we see in a magazine. And the reality is that image in a magazine is only the set point for 2% of Americans.
You're talking about body type then, ectomorph, mesomorph, endomorph?
Correct. And you can attempt to do all kinds of really unhealthy things to your body to try and conform to an image that you have in your mind of what you want to look like. And the reality is that your body is going to fight you. And Jenny mentioned that Ed would rear its head and fight back. But your body, it's going to do the same thing. And really, we need to get at a place of acceptance.
Yeah, I mean, that's so important. This is Jenny. You know, I did not accept my body for so long. For so long, I wanted my body to be less than it was, to be thinner than I'm naturally supposed to be. Today, I'm a healthy weight. I look just like my mom. I look like my dad and my brothers. We all, our entire family has a very similar body type. You know, I fit right in now. But when I was struggling with my eating disorder and trying to be an unnatural weight for my size, I was extremely thin compared to my family members. And to be that thin, to stay that thin, took my life, really. I mean, it took my joy, it took my happiness, it took my freedom, and it nearly killed me. So, you know, I'm at this weight today, I'm happy, I'm joyful, I can eat what I want as intuitive eating. You know, I don't put food into categories anymore, good and bad, and just have a peaceful relationship, which is really amazing. And I wish more people in our society could embrace that. It really is acceptance.
Craig, thanks a lot for the call and the great questions. Appreciate it. 866-780-9100. Randy is next in Iowa County. Good morning, Randy.
Burr.
Yeah.
The guy that was just on, you know, he sounds like he's a little irritated with the price of fresh fruit. But, you know, if you go to the Iowa City Farmers Market in season or any of the other ones, you're going to talk to the person that's producing this stuff. And I'm not saying you're going to find a fat person or a skinny person there. It's just, you're putting money in the producer's pocket instead of Walmart. The other question I really had was, is the girlfriend's addicted to Diet Coke, and she cannot kick the habit. Any suggestions?
That's interesting, because I think, Jenny, you were addicted, if you want to use that word, to Dr. Pepper, I believe, for a long time.
Yes, I actually wrote about that in my new book. It might surprise you. There's actually a whole chapter in my new book about my addiction to Diet Dr. Pepper, and it certainly felt like an addiction. What it was actually a lingering part of my eating disorder. Recovery for me came in so many different phases, and for so long I tried to be recovered, but also, you know, drink so many Diet Cokes a day and Diet Dr. Pepper that I was really unhealthy. And my whole life was based around where I could find my next Diet Dr. Pepper. And I had to realize that that was part of my eating disorder. That was a lingering behavior. The reason I drank so much Diet Dr. Pepper was because I was trying to mask my feelings of hunger and trying to eat less. So for me, that was part of my eating disorder. I actually had to talk to my therapist about it, and I actually had to look at it. And now, you know, I don't have that problem. I have balance now, I guess you could say, with diet soda in general. Most part, I don't even drink it. But on occasion, if I want one, I can. And that's kind of what we're looking at, is balance.
How are you dealing with all that caffeine? I mean, there's a lot of caffeine if you're drinking all those diet sodas.
It was not healthy. Not healthy at all.
And there's not too much in Diet Coke or Dr. Pepper that's good for you, is there? Not very much.
Yeah, and that's why, you know, that was just one of the things I had to learn to find balance with. There's nothing inherently wrong with a diet soda, but if you're
once
drinking 10 a day, yeah, you know, like I was, or panicking at a vending machine when they ran out of Diet Coke, right, that's when I knew I had a problem.
Well, we'll take a break. If you can stay in the studio for 6 minutes, Jenny and Michelle, Jenny Schaefer, Goodbye Ed, Hello Me, her new book, and Michelle Rowling from Iowa State. We'll be back in about 5 minutes on Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Talk of Iowa continues. I'm Dennis Reese. Today, talking to Jenny Schaefer, author of Goodbye Ed, Ed for Eating Disorders, Hello Me, and also Michelle Rowling, who's a certified eating disorder specialist at Iowa State, as we start Eating Disorders Awareness Week. Jenny, you say that eating disorders are not really about food and weight anyway, so recovery is not just about food and weight. It's about much more. And as you get into the book, you discuss such things as perfectionism, which I found extremely interesting, because you, from an early age, were a perfectionist, and as you discovered, that is not a good thing.
Right, right. You know, from a very young age, I struggled with perfectionism, and it was tied to a lot of anxiety. What I was told in one of my first therapy sessions for my eating disorder was that if I did not recover from my perfectionism, I would never recover from my eating disorder. My whole treatment team told me that to fully recover from ED, I would have to look at perfectionism and I would have to change my thinking. And I'll be honest with you, I did not believe them. I actually thought they just want to make me lazy. You know, perfectionism was my motivator in life and I was not going to change that. Well, years down the road, when I was still struggling with my eating disorder, I realized that they were right and that my eating disorder was not about the food. It was about all the underlying issues. And one of them, one of the biggest for me, was perfectionism. And I had to start making changes. And people might think it's interesting, but you know, part of my therapy, part of my recovery from perfectionism was actually being assigned things like television. You know, I was actually assigned to watch Friends every week. And that for me was actually progress in my life, showing that, you know, I didn't have to work all the time and that I could actually sit down and watch 30 minutes of TV. And that might sound strange to some people, but for me, that was a big part of my therapy and getting better from perfectionism.
Well, you just weren't able to have much fun, period, were you, for a long time?
Oh, not at all. I mean, having fun was so challenging. I felt guilty for doing anything that was not working, and being productive was my big word back then, productive. There's a chapter in my book you probably read called Having Fun to Save My Life. I actually had to learn how to have fun to save my life, to get better. And again, that was tied to perfectionism. What I learned with perfectionism, though, it's not about getting rid of that trait. You know, that's a personality trait I was born with. What I had to learn to do was refine it, to focus it in areas that it could actually be helpful rather than harmful. You know, writing a book is something that having a little dose of perfectionism is kind of helpful. My editor loves me. You know, I catch comma and punctuation marks he misses. So that's good. But applying perfectionism to food and weight, it's not good, and it almost killed me. Does that make sense?
Yeah, you don't want it to rule your life. And then finally, you went back to the guitar, and then you're a wonderful singer, by the way.
Oh, thanks.
Heard some of your music. You have a lovely voice. And you live in Nashville. I should mention you have a degree in biochemistry. That's impressive.
Yes, I actually was intending on going to medical school and took a year off from that to go to Nashville, moved to Nashville from Texas, and wanted to be a singer. Well, at that point in my life, I was so sick with my eating disorder that I couldn't sing. And when a year came by to go back to medical school, I never went. And I've stayed in Nashville, and I'm very grateful that I am doing music again now that I'm healthy, and I'm just now learning how to play guitar. I'm excited tonight in Iowa at the university. I will be singing a song, the song that's in my new book, It's Okay to Be Happy, which I wrote with my best friends Dave Berg and Georgia Middleman. Yeah, that's a true joy in my life. Really, recovery from eating disorders, it's so much more about recovering yourself. Mm-hmm. You know, you recover from the eating disorder to recover yourself, to get yourself back. And that's been the most exciting part of the recovery journey, is figuring out what I like to do and that I love to sing, and my favorite color is pink.
Okay. Before we get back to calls, just a quick question. I'm curious, Michelle Rowling, certified eating disorder specialist at Iowa State University, how many students do you see who are coming into your office for help with this disease?
Well, here on campus, we follow the national statistics. And what we know is that 3 out of 10 individuals are struggling with some kind of disordered eating or negative relationship with food, body, and exercise. And that 1 out of 10 individuals struggles with a diagnosable eating disorder, the kinds that we talked about at the beginning of the show. You know, that would mean that here on campus, we probably have somewhere between 2,500 and 3,000 students struggling with an eating disorder. Only about a third of those are going to seek help at some point in their life. And you know, at any given point at the counseling center, we're actively working with, I would say, about 40 students at any given time that are presenting and ready to do work and really motivated to get help. We run eating disorder groups year-round, and we're doing individual counseling and assessments all the time.
And Jenny Schaefer writes in her book, I didn't realize this, anorexia has the highest mortality rate of any psychiatric disorder.
Absolutely.
Pretty interesting. Mm-hmm. Let's go to Nancy, who's calling from Des Moines. Good morning, Nancy.
Good morning, Jenny. Thank you, first of all, for sharing you know, through your books, because I don't think enough people understand this illness. We have a daughter, she's 13, and I was wondering at what point, at what weight does she need to be, do you think, to get the thinking clearer, you know, so that she can admit that she has a problem? You know, is there some magic weight?
You know, that's a really good question. I'm going to let Michelle jump in on that, too, because she works with people every day to see the weight change. But you're asking, is your daughter in recovery right now and she's trying to gain weight?
Yes, she's actually in an inpatient program and doing really well. And so the other parts of my question are, you know, what to expect when she comes home and the best way to get her back into school and friends that she hasn't really been interacting with for 6 months or more.
Well, first of all, I'm really glad you asked the question you did about weight. You know, normally I get the question, what was your lowest weight? And as you probably know as a mother, that I don't answer that question. Weight can be a really triggering issue. But what you're asking is, what's the good weight to be where you really start functioning again? And that's such a good point, because I don't think people realize how much malnutrition actually plays into the eating disorder mind. When I was sick with my eating disorder, I had no idea I was sick with an eating disorder for so many years because I was so malnourished. And really, there was a turning point for me when I started eating healthy and when I got to the appropriate weight, where all of a sudden my brain kind of clicked over and it was like I could see clearly, as if the light came on. And then at that point, looking back at pictures of me when I was really struggling, I would actually say, wow, you know, I did not look good back then. I was too thin. And the whole picture became clear. But what I can't tell you, you know, for your daughter, what that specific weight would be. That would be a question, you know, I would definitely have talked to the doctor about, talk to her nutritionist, talk to her therapist. And also, it's important to note that it does feel like a light came on for me, but it also was a transition period. There was no magic day or moment that all of a sudden I was at the right weight and bam, the light came on. It was more a process of about a year, to be honest with you, you know, that I was actually at a healthy weight. And then I really slowly started seeing the truth. So does that help with the weight question, Nancy?
It makes it sound like it's a long process. I was hoping that, you know, once she restored to maybe the weight that she was before she was,
you know, and let me,
she started to restrict.
I want to ask Michelle to join in here, too, because it's your daughter is much younger than I was. And I struggled for so long that I really think my whole recovery process was a lot slower than other people. So, Michelle, do you want to take that, since you deal a lot with weights and people changing?
You know, really, what the treatment team is going to look at is a weight range that they're going to ask for her to get at and maintain. And the true test is going to be how long it takes for her body to trust she's going to stay within that weight range. So, you know, as Jenny talked about, that it wasn't just making that weight, but it's about the brain really relaxing. When you're in the midst of struggling with an eating disorder, it's like your brain and your body are disconnected. There's a great distance between the two of them. And really what has to happen is for an integration to happen, for the brain to really say, okay, I can start functioning at my highest level because I know that I'm going to get the appropriate amount of nourishment every day so that I can do my job. Because right now the disconnect is about the brain trying to keep your daughter alive. And although it tends to be quicker for people, honestly, who struggle with bulimia than for individuals who struggle with severe anorexia, because the disconnect from a nourishment standpoint is so much stronger when someone's struggling from anorexia.
Nancy, thanks. Thanks so much for the call. Good luck to you and your daughter. Let's go next to Jill. And Jill is calling from Polk City. Hi, Jill.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. A few minutes ago, you mentioned set points on weight. And I was just wondering, if set points change as you get older, how do you know when you've hit a realistic set point?
That's a fantastic question. Your set point can shift. And in part, in this country, one of the things that shifts your set point is a dieting cycle. So that when you restrict and then go back to more typical eating and restrict, you change your metabolism and you actually shift your set point to a higher number. And so it definitely shifts. And you know you've reached it when your it's like that number your body keeps wanting to gravitate toward. And you know you've reached it when you feel balanced, when you're eating regularly and intuitively and you're being active, and your body just kind of naturally stays at that weight, regardless of your food intake or the holidays, that your body's going to stay within a 5 pounds below it or 5 pounds above it. It's just going to come back to that same range.
And emotionally for me, this is Jenny, you know, when I'm at my set point, I realize food takes a proper place in my life. I'm not thinking about food all the time. I'm really only thinking about food when I'm hungry. You know, when I'm hungry, I think, you know, I'll eat. And also, food has a proper place in that in our society, we do use food to celebrate. You know, during the holidays, food's a big part of it. And when I'm at my set point, that doesn't stress me out. That doesn't bother me. I actually enjoy going to parties and I have fun and I don't concentrate the entire time on the food. I enjoy the food. I like it. I look forward to it. But I don't go to parties for the food, which when I was severely anorexic, I did do that. I had a hard time letting myself eat alone. So when I would go out, I would actually binge on food because it was the one time I was actually able to eat. So it feels really good to be at a healthy weight and to put food in proper place. You know, food is just food. In our society, we give it so much power.
Yeah, indeed.
That's for sure. Well, right. So when you're looking at a lot of these set or the height and weight charts that give those healthy weight ranges, that may not necessarily be an accurate range then for you, because I may be actually feeling like my set point may be 10 pounds more than that, is what you're saying.
Absolutely. And not very many people know this. Really, it's the insurance companies that originally set the height weight charts, so it was really about mortality than health.
Okay.
That's interesting. Okay. Thanks so much.
Thank you,
Jill.
So much.
Right, appreciate the call. Jill called from Polk City. Let's go next to Chris in Garner. And good morning, Chris.
Good morning. I have a question regarding I know of a person who has coexisting schizophrenia, mild MR, and an eating disorder. You know, we live in a rural part of Iowa, and we're trying to figure out what would be an appropriate treatment for someone with those diagnoses. The only thing we have right now is our local psychiatric unit that we take her to when she's, you know, going through some episodes. But we really, really wonder if there, with her diagnoses that she has, a place that we can really address this eating disorder for her.
That's a great question, Chris. It's one that Iowans really struggle with because we are so isolated from facilities that can really specialize in eating disorders. What I'd really encourage you to do, Chris, is to get in touch with your insurance company first and find out if there are specific criteria for different inpatient facilities that they will cover. Typically, they're going to say they're going to work with somebody who falls under a hospitalization. Then you can start looking at different treatment facilities around the Midwest. And I'd be more than happy to help you kind of sort that out, Chris. If you want to contact me off air, we can really look at some specific facilities. There are wonderful professionals all over the country, and there is an eating disorder group, and it's the ED Referral Organization, as well as the National Eating Disorders Organization, that all have you know, just different listservs that have professionals listed.
Okay. Yeah, that would be great. I mean, if I could have the opportunity to get in touch with you and maybe talk a little bit more about this. Yeah, we're really concerned about her. And so where would I contact you at then?
You can just go on to, I have a personal website. It's michellerolling.com, Michelle with two L's and Rolling with one. And because I'm really glad you brought up this issue of not knowing where to go for resources. There are a core group of us that are getting ready to meet to form an eating disorder coalition of Central Iowa. And if any listeners out there would like to be part of brainstorming what we want this organization to look like and what kind of referral sources we want to provide, we have our first meeting set up for Saturday, May 1st. It'll be located in Adel. And you can contact me at michelle@michellerowling.com for more information.
Okay, wonderful. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks a lot for the call.
Thank you.
Okay. Chris from Garner, 866-780-9100 is the line to call in. We have some lines open. Here's an anonymous email. I have a daughter currently in treatment. Please mention what the warning signs are. Also, do boys get the disease?
Yeah, that's an awesome question. You're getting a lot of good questions, Dennis.
Right.
You know, yes, first of all, with boys, I'm so glad we're bringing this up because, yes, many, many men struggle these days of all ages. And that's one of the issues that's probably closest to my heart right now, because I get so many emails from young guys who might be the quarterback of the football team, you know, in Texas, and they're struggling and they don't know what to say. They don't know what to do because they feel like eating disorders are a female disease. So men out there listening need to know that men struggle with eating disorders too, just like women, and it's not a female disease. And I would encourage people to get help out there if you're a male struggling, and if you're a parent and you think your son might be struggling, really look at that, because he honestly might be. Don't negate it just because he's a man, because men do have eating disorders. But some of the warning signs, well, obviously there's the ones around food. So if you're going to notice someone who all of a sudden is skipping meals, is making up excuses why not to go out to eat with you, you're going to look for signs of binging. Sometimes you might find wrappers, food wrappers in the trash can that indicate someone has been binging on food. You also can look for someone who all of a sudden they get up and they go to the bathroom after they eat. They constantly excuse themselves for that. That's a sign they could be throwing up their food. Other signs around food and weight are you're going to look for someone who's lost weight, or someone who's gained weight, or someone who just has a constant fluctuation in weight. I'll also point out, though, you know, 70% of people with bulimia are going to look normal, so weight's not even going to be a factor there. But I really want to point out signs that are not even related to food and weight at all. Those are things like changes of mood. When I was really struggling, my parents surely noticed that I became very moody. I became angry. I became mean to my little brother. I constantly apologize to him even today for that. And that was a sign that I was struggling with an eating disorder. Also depression, also isolation. I was a kid who, when I would come home from school, I went into my room and I shut the door and I studied all night, and that was my perfectionism. But I also isolated to get away from food. So you're going to look at such a wide range of signs. And actually, the National Eating Disorders Association has a great website. It's myneda.org, myneda.org, that has a very thorough list of signs and symptoms. I don't know if, Michelle, you want to add any to that.
Well, the only thing that I would also add is just a real focus on food talk, diet talk, body talk, comparison of themselves to other people. Often some actual like food obsession, like studying cookbooks or food magazines, and just really being food and diet focused.
You write, Jenny, that what I discovered is that a little restricting hurts a lot. It sent me right back down to the foot of the mountain every time. It sent me into relapse. I thought that was interesting, because I think a lot of people just from time to time get maybe depressed about their weight and try some restricting. Skip a meal, or just go on, you know, really super low calorie sort of diet for a while, but that is not the answer, right?
No, not the answer at all. And thank you, Dennis. You're bringing up such great points. I thought I could recover from anorexia and bulimia, but hold on to a little bit of restricting. And just like you said, so many people in our society do restrict as a lifestyle. And people need to get the message that that's not healthy. As long as I was restricting, I was holding on to my eating disorder. And every time that set me up for binging, you know, people out there know what that's like. You'll restrict. And then what do you do later on? Say you go to a party, you don't eat the cake because you're going to restrict and you're going to be, quote, good, because people label that as good behavior, which is funny to me because obviously whether or not you eat cake doesn't make you a good or bad person. But what I would do is I'd restrict the cake. Well, then what would I do when I got home? I'm going to eat the whole cake because I wouldn't let myself have it. And I know people out there know what I'm talking about. And what I found is that if I just eat a piece of cake at the party, I'm not going to go home and eat the whole cake. It's all about balance. And as long as I'm restricting, I'm setting myself up for failure.
Now we're just about out of time, unfortunately. But I just want to ask you about fad diets. You know, you turn on the TV and lose 20 pounds for $20, and you say the dieting industry is financially successful despite its actual lack of success in helping people lose weight. So that's so much for the dieting industry is what you're saying.
Yes, I mean, we're constantly told, as you said, when you look at the TV, this diet's in this week. Well, it's out next week. And it's really not about dieting. Diets don't work. Obviously, people diet, they gain more weight back usually, almost 98% of the time. So what it's really about is intuitive eating, listening to your body, eating when you're hungry, stopping when you're full. That's what little kids do. And we all need to get back to how little kids eat if we think about it.
Jenny Schaefer, thanks so very much. Really appreciate the conversation.
Thank you so much.
And also thanks to Michelle Rowling from Iowa State. You guys are great. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Dennis.
Talk of Iowa. I should mention before we leave that Jenny Schaefer is speaking tonight at 7 o'clock at the Iowa State Memorial Union in Ames. So go and listen and hear Jenny speak at 7 o'clock tonight in Ames. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. Our assistant producer for the program today, our student assistant, Rosalind Sixby. Thank you, Rosalind. Talk of Iowa back tomorrow at 10 o'clock. On Iowa Public Radio. I'm Dennis Reese.